Welcome to The Apprentice Mind, Virtual Beit Midrash at Hadar. Thank you so much for joining in on this. What day of the week? We are Tuesday. I'm coming in from Atlanta, Georgia. I am the new director of Hadar Atlanta. I'm going to give you a little bit of a background into who we're going to be learning about, and then we're going to start learning. We're learning about Rav Shlomo Volbe. Rav Shlomo Volbe is a really, really big name in the modern Musar, the modern Musar world. Musar being, or Musar, is the practice of religious ethical character refinement. So how do we become a better person? In other words, the Torah tells you what to do, X and Y and Z, but it so rarely tells you what are the steps that it takes to get there to cultivate a rich personality. What does it take to cultivate, say, dignity or humility or patience? All of those things. And Rav Volbe is a really interesting character. Rav Volbe grows up in Germany as a totally not religious human being, goes to the University of Berlin, and ends up becoming an Orthodox Jew during his time there. And through his time as an Orthodox Jew, he's actually able to take a ton of secular wisdom, a lot of different thinking about the world, and particularly psychology. He even writes a book about how to raise a child that is based on the thinking of John Dewey. So he is taking all of these elements and inserting them into the Musar tradition, which makes his particular thinking extremely psychologically profound. And that the truth is that carries on a tradition of Musar thinkers who are profoundly psychological. Just to give you a quick example, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who exists in the early 1800s, he has a similar background in which he is taking the subconscious very seriously. In fact, his taking of the subconscious seriously, or the unconscious mind seriously, predates Freud. He gets a lot of his thinking, we think, at least scholars think, from Immanuel Kant. And that ends up starting this rich tradition. Even Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm, who is the author of Kelm, has a lot of psychology to him. And Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm ends up being a teacher of the teacher of Rav Volbe. And we are going to learn Rav Volbe's teaching. And we're going to start off with a basic question. The question is, what is the difference between a map and a compass? For me, a lot of what Musar is the compass, right? There's so often where I can understand what humility is, but actually how to become humble is a different thing. I can define it. I can tell you that humility, as the Rambam says, is the median between right, exaggeration of your abilities and a minimization of your abilities is somewhere right in between. I can tell you that your dignity is being able to see the gravity of every individual person. But how to cultivate it is a very different thing. How to take yourself, how to take what is already in you and find a path towards a destination that you can see on a map, right? That is what a lot of Musar is. And I think that's a lot of what Rav Volbe is trying to do. So what we're going to see here is we're going to have three sessions, but we're going to see that he's going to start almost with a map, and then he's going to give you a compass. He's going to start with describing what a particular character trait is, and then over time, he's going to give you a little bit of advice about how to get there. Okay, so I know where all the things are, but how do I start with the work on myself? Another way of phrasing this might be, a lot of times if you learn Musar, the bar is just way high. Like you're not even seeing my hand right now, right? What it means to be humble is actually so precise that to get there seems virtually impossible. And what Rav Volbe does, I think with incredible nuance, sophistication, and psychological insight is by the end of this chapter, even though the bar starts here, it actually ends up going down to here. And I'm hoping in our time together, we'll be able to get there. So we're going to go ahead and start with our source here. This is a chapter called Hitlamdut. And we're going to get to exactly what that word means by the end of this first paragraph. And just to let you know, I'm going to start in the Hebrew and I'm going to translate. My translation, I think, is pretty darn good. But you might see that I'm diverging a little bit here and there. As I go through the Hebrew, it's always important to ground yourself in the Hebrew. He writes the following. Oh, and by the way, there are times where you'll see ellipses. I felt like that particular point wasn't necessarily important, and I decided to skip over it. So thank you for listening to my introduction. We're going to get going. All right. Aleinu limtzo derech ba'avodah. right? It is upon us. It is an obligation for us to find a way in our service of God, in our service of becoming a better human being, and just the spiritual work, she'ena me'oreret ge'ava, that doesn't awaken arrogance, right? Right from the get-go, he says, there's this deep problem that we have that every single time we try to work on ourselves, we might actually become arrogant. And he actually writes elsewhere that there's another problem that I might not become arrogant. I might actually become melancholic or lowly or depressed, right? Because there's two ways of understanding what happens when you work on yourself. Way number one is I do something good and I think, wow, how amazing I am. And maybe it's even the next step, which is not just how amazing I am, but I want everybody to see how amazing I am. Right? Or the inverse of that. I'm working on myself and I fall short. I fall short and I think, what a terrible human being I am. And maybe even worse, although that depends on your perspective, I start thinking everybody knows how bad I am and how much I'm falling short. And I think this is a particular challenge of somebody who is externally working on their musar, a person who's externally working on trying to become a better person. Right, that image consciousness can plague you. And he says, it's so important for us not to arouse, not to awaken any sort of arrogance in ourselves. And then there's a second problem with arrogance. The second problem with arrogance is that arrogance puts you at the center. And the truth is if you're working on yourself, especially in a religious ethical sense, the goal is always to decenter to the self and put God back at the center. So arrogance becomes a deep, deep challenge for him. And I want to add another thing about his understanding of arrogance, which is he's working on the Maimonidean tradition. I think I already mentioned this before, the Maimonidean tradition, that arrogance is when you over-exaggerate your abilities or your values in the world. So imagine somebody you consider to be the absolute best in the world. I'm a sports fanatic. I'm going to call it Michael Jordan. Right? If Michael Jordan were to say, I am not one of the best basketball players in the entire world, he'd be under-exaggerating it. And you'd sit there and be like, that's false humility. You're not actually admitting the truth, which is everybody agrees that you're one of the best players in the world. Right? But the same thing might also go to the inverse, which is if Michael Jordan never admitted the incredible luck that he had in just natural height or natural ability or just being the most diligent human being in the history of basketball, he wouldn't be recognizing the truth, which is he received so many gifts. Call that his parents, call that genetics, call that being born at the right time in the right place. If he was born 100 years ago, the sport may not even exist. Right? To not recognize his luck would be over-exaggerating his value or his ability in the world. Oh, I need to accurately understand where I get things from. All right. And the second thing that Rav Volpe says is that to be human is to have at least a little bit of arrogance. In fact, there is not a single human being in this world who doesn't have a little speck of arrogance in them. So on the one hand, it's incredibly important to try to avoid it. And the other hand, it's incredibly valuable to recognize that no matter what you do, you're always going to have a little bit of that. All right. So we have to figure out a way, how do we avoid this? And it's unclear when he says me'oreret, that awakens. It's unclear if he's saying to get rid of it entirely or just how do we try to avoid it as much as we can within our ability? And he continues, Zehu davar kashem on the second line. Kimat stira mineuve. It might actually be a contradiction in and of itself. Ki keitzad lo yitga'e adam, because how could a person not become arrogant? Ka'asher yihyeh le'ba'al ma'asim, when they are trying to become a ba'al ma'asim, a master of deeds. Right? And he adds a really interesting point. If I'm becoming a ba'al ma'asim, a master of deeds, or somebody whose character is more refined, she'mitzad hadin eino mechuyav bahem, that when it comes to Jewish law, you're not actually obligated in them. And I love this insight. If you read the Torah will never, ever, ever tell you that you are required, lefiha halacha, according to law, to become humble. It just doesn't exist. There is something about you're required to love God, right? There are other laws that are bein adam lechaveru, between you and another person, but particular character traits basically don't exist. We laud Moshe Rabbeinu, we laud Moshe, our teacher, for being the most humble person in the history of humankind, but the Torah doesn't include it within the 613 mitzvot. And he says, if I'm doing something which is actually optional, and he uses this language, v'ki'ilu mitna meni divat libo, from the volunteering of his heart, it's optional, hu shoked alehem, that he is diligent about them. If it is not, if I read the Shulchan Aruch, you're not going to see any single law about becoming humble or developing dignity. So there is a certain change in your psychology as soon as you realize, as soon as you start thinking this is optional. Right? The truth of the matter is, I think the Rambam would clearly articulate that it's not optional, but in your head, if you read the Shulchan Aruch, it's just not going to be there. And he says, Koshi ze mechayev otanu lisol la'atzmenu derech chayim chadasha. Koshi ze, this difficulty, mechayev otanu, obligates us lisol la'atzmenu derech chayim chadasha, a new way of life, derech hitlamdut, right? The way of hitlamdut. And he says, what is it? Right? Now, the word hitlamdut is a fascinating word. If there are anybody out there who is an Israeli grammatician, is that the word grammatician? I think Hebrew grammatician. You will know that it comes from the binyan, the structure of hitpa'el. And hitpa'el is reflexive. It's something that you do to oneself. And this is a really interesting move that he makes because normally, if I see the word lamed mem dalid, I think about that as lomed, which is to learn. And I would think that's something that I do to myself. And he invokes the word hitlamdut to say, no, there's two types of learning. There is a learning which is just about knowing knowledge, and then there is a learning which is something that you do to yourself, right? And there might also be, as part of this, a process-oriented idea, right? And this is where I got the title to my class, which is The Apprentice Mind, right? If I'm always in the process of learning, if I am learning for the sake of growing, then it has to be something in which I am letting go of my ego. It is an egoless learning. It is like being an apprentice, or to use a fun example, like being a sous chef. Imagine you're the greatest chef in the history of chefs, and you never become the head chef. You just travel your entire life being a sous chef because you always recognize that there is more to learn. Another way of phrasing this, just to add, is this idea that if I have a beginner's mind or an apprentice mind, I am always willing to ask a question. Milamdenu HaRambam, the Rambam teaches us, ki tachlito shel Talmud Torah, that the goal, the purpose of learning Torah, hi hitlamdut, is actually hitlamdut. We actually don't necessarily learn in order to take things into our minds and memorize them. We learn to do this hitlamdut. We learn in order to become better people. Mahi hahitlamdut hazot, nuchal lirot, what is this hitlamdut? What is this apprentice mindset? We can see in every single book of the Rambam's Yad HaChazaka, which is another name for the Mishneh Torah. Lemashal, right? For example, halomed masechet negaim, whoever learns the tractate or the book in Mishneh Torah about leprosy. Ha'amuka, which is of great depth, ve'osekba, right, and deals with it. Basically, if you look at all of these laws about leprosy, right, you're going to notice something. First, you're going to see, right, that it's kind of uninteresting. Let me rephrase that. Many people, when they learn about leprosy, they think, "What an antiquated idea. We're not afflicted by that." Right? I don't see people walking around with leprosy. And the question, I think, for many of us, not all of us, for many of us becomes, how in the world does this even apply to me? And he says something interesting. Ka'asher yagia l'siyum ha'alachot b'Rambam. Once you get to the end of the Rambam, and you can look at the last chapter where he says this explicitly, we're not going to go inside, but ka'asher yagia l'siyum ha'alachot b'Rambam, when you get to the end, yimsa sham dvarim chotzvim lahavot ish. Right? You will find there things, chotzev la'avotesh is a reference to Tehillim, right? Things that kindle flames of fire. We say that on Friday night, God is actually the one that kindles fire. And through the vehicle of humanity, God actually can kindle fire. Right? The Rambam actually, through writing it down, right, kindles our own fire, which is a beautiful spiritual claim that one of the ways that God brings fire to the world is through Torah, right? But if you get to the end, if you get into the end of Masechet Nagaim, this tractate on this what seems to be an antiquated affliction, you see things that kindle fires, be'isur lashon hara, and the forbidden law or the prohibition of speaking evil. The ki'ilu nikra vilon me'alei nav, right? And it's almost as if a curtain is ripped out from over your eyes. Yivakach ladat ki b'chol ha-masechet hu'asak be'emet b'sefer chafetz chayim. Right? And he will realize that, in fact, right, the entire time he was learning it, he wasn't just learning about leprosy. He was learning about the laws of entailed in chafetz chayim. The book Chafetz Chaim was written by Yisrael Meir Kagan, who actually also wrote the Mishnah Berurah, but he wrote a more wide-known, just as wide-known book about lashon hara, about evil speech, about not how to gossip. If you read the last chapter, it's this beautiful exploration of what it means to just be kind in your words to another human being. And slowly you realize that you were never just learning about tzaraat, you were learning about something deeper. Right? V'yishtomem halomed hazeh, and that person will like feel the sense of wonder. Echu bechol shkirato ala masechet. How with all of his diligence while learning this, lo hirgish ki bechomer isur lashon hara u'osek, that he was actually dealing with lashon hara, with the laws of evil speech. V'halo parsha mefureshet hi b'torah. And isn't this not a clear thing in the Torah? Tishamer benega hatzarad lishmor me'od v'la'asot. Right? In cases of a skin affliction, be most careful to do exactly as the Levitical priests, the Levi'im, the Kohanim, all right, tell you to do. And then literally a pasuk later, which I have that above, it says, Zachor et asher asa Hashem alokecha, remember that which God did to Miriam, b'derech b'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim, right, when you left Egypt. And Rashi says, im bata lizaher, shelo tilakeh betzarat, if you came in order to make sure that you do not become afflicted with leprosy, al tesaper lashon hara, right? I actually think that Rashi is doing a much more sophisticated move than you might otherwise realize. Right? I might take for granted the fact that Pasuk Chet and Pasuk Tet, verses 8 and 9 in Deuteronomy, I might take for granted that they're next to each other. And he says, no, even that is an opportunity to learn. That's an opportunity to learn that there is something deeply connected between Tzaraat and, right, speaking Lashon Hara. Right. What that is, you can learn in the Rambam, but he continues. Right, v'nochach halomed hazeh ki hu lamad heitev et masechet negaim aval bli hitlamdut. And this person realizes, wait a minute, I just didn't practice hitlamdut. Another way of phrasing this is, it is so easy to go throughout the world and write off things that feel foreign or weird or uninteresting or archaic and say, this has nothing to do with me. What an incredible challenge it is, or what an incredibly beautiful disposition it is to do the inverse. To say, my first inclination is this has nothing to do with me, but what about my second inclination? How can I actually grow from this? And this is why in the next verse he says, Benzoma Omer, Benzoma says, Ezehu Chacham, who is the wise person? Halomed mikol Adam, the person who learns from everybody. Not only do I do this with esoteric concepts like tzaraat and leprosy, but I also do it with other people. And he says the only way to actually do this is derech hahitlamdut, the way of the apprentice mind. This egoless learning, the willingness to ask questions and the willingness to move past your assumptions to see that there is value in everything. Because it says after that, shene emar, I'm in the second line of the Benzoma paragraph, mikol melamdai hiskalti. I have gained knowledge from everybody. In Perek Tehillim, in the chapter of Tehillim that this is cited from, right, Mikol Olam Dai Hiskalti, right, is actually saying, because I learned Torah, I gained more wisdom than all of my teachers. And Ben Zoma inverts that. And he says, actually, the Torah becomes my teacher because the Torah is God's testimony in the world. And when Rav Wolbe quotes this, there is possibly an undercurrent of the following teaching, which is, if God created everything, that means that everything is a testimony to God. And if everything is a testimony to God, that means it has something to teach me, right? And that includes every single human that you come across. Next week, when we meet, right, we're going to go into detail of the following question. Wait, really every single person? Even that person who lives across the street from me, who I cannot stand, right? Even my sibling who I haven't talked to for years, right? Even the person that I read about in the news maybe, although I think he's really speaking interpersonally, right? The question becomes, if I take this seriously and if I can have an apprentice mindset, how do I actually go about doing this work? It's so easy to read these things and say, okay, I've sinned. But the question is, what mindset do I need to have to actually grow? Thank you so much, everybody, for learning with me. I'm really, really grateful for you being here. Really, really grateful. And I look forward to seeing many of your faces next week.